Craftsman Days are here at Lowe's with big savings on the tools you need. Save $100 on the Craftsman V26 Tool Power Tool Combo Kit, now at $199. No matter what the project is, Craftsman's high-quality, high-performance products empower you to build on. Visit Lowe's and check out the full line of Craftsman tools today. Valid through 7/9 while supplies last. Selection varies by location. Maximum initial battery voltage measured without a workload is 20 volts. Nominal voltage is 18.
When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper, distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at remarkable.com today.
Here on Stolen Lives, we discuss brutal and heartbreaking crimes against children. Themes may include child murder, torture, and sexual, domestic, and child abuse. I do try my best to remain respectful for the babies in these stories and leave out unnecessary details that, honestly, none of us need to know to understand the frustration of why and how this ever happened. However, if you find any of these themes triggering, this podcast may not be for you. Listener discretion is advised. This week's story is a listener suggestion. Thank you to Laura for bringing Rama's story to my attention. This is a long-term missing persons case from Australia, and one that is actually up there on the list of unsolved cases I would love to see resolved. I get asked to cover Madeleine McCann's disappearance, like almost a daily request to discuss Madeleine. And while every missing child is important and they deserve to have their story told, there are some that haven't had the attention that they most greatly deserve. The abduction of Madeleine McCann has striking similarities to the disappearance of a little girl we'll talk about today. Rama's parents are also considered, by the court of public opinion, to be responsible for her disappearance. November 2005, Lunia, New South Wales, Australia. A family wake up to their 18-month-old toddler missing from the bed she was sharing with her big sisters. A cut in the fly screen wire suggesting a stranger abduction. But is there more than meets the eye? Could this little girl's parents know more than they are letting on? And where is Rama, almost 20 years since she vanished on that warm spring evening? This is Rama's story.
Today, Hossein El-Danawi barely had the strength to get through another public appeal.
Of course we miss Rama. Everyone, we miss Rama. We want to find a way. If she's still alive, exactly what it.
19 months was all Rama's family got to share with her. In November 2005, she was snatched from the family's former home at Lunia. Her abductor cut through the fly screen and took the toddler from the bedroom she shared with her four sisters.
We don't know how and why Rama disappeared. The homicide squad has been investigating the matter for some time now, and again, we don't know whether or not she's alive or has in fact passed away.
Before we can discuss Rama and her disappearance on that humid spring evening in 2005, we must go back to the start. Hossein El-Danawi arrived in Sydney from a Lebanese village near Tripoli when he was 17 in 1988. Hossein later returned to Lebanon to marry Aliyah in an arranged marriage organised between their parents. Together, the young couple had four children in Lebanon before Hossein moved the entire family to Australia permanently in 2000. They had more children in rather quick succession. By November 2005, when our story takes place, the couple had had four more children and Aliyah was pregnant with the couple's ninth child. The family of almost 11 living in a rental house on Hill Road in Lunia, a suburb in Western Sydney. Members of Hossein's family leased small farms on the outskirts of Sydney to grow fruit and vegetables, and that was one of the ways they supported themselves. Hossein would sometimes work at his brother's fruit shop, And on the weekends, he ran a small fruit stand himself at local farmers' markets. But the main source of income for this large and growing family were social security payments that they received from the government. This did not go down well with Hossein's father Mustafa, and he had all but cut off contact with his son. This would play a major part in the early investigation. Police focused the investigation on this theory, that possibly Rama had been abducted and taken back to Lebanon as a result of this family dispute. Rama El-Dinawi was born April 19, 2004, and by November 2005, when our story takes place, Rama was 18 months old. She was the baby of the family. Well, she would be for the next couple of months anyway, because, as I said, her mother was pregnant. Rama was a lively and playful toddler. Aliyah would later say that Rama was the heart of the home. Rama was learning both English and Arabic, and could say a handful of words, with her favourite being Mum, Dad, and Oh No. Rama was meeting all of her milestones, excelling really, taking her first steps at only 7 months old. By all accounts, Rama was growing into a happy little girl. Unfortunately, Rama was also somewhat of a sickly child. In the days leading up to her disappearance, she was experiencing quite a bit of pain. She was teething but also had some mouth ulcers. Because of this, she'd been crying fairly consistently for several days. We are just going to take a quick break now for a word from one of our sponsors.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Thursday, November 9th, 2005. This was just a usual day in the El-Dinawi household. A number of family and friends visited, as they often did. The Lebanese community being one big family, and with extended family living nearby, it was the norm for the home to be busy and always filled with people. According to statements to police, there were no visitors from 5 p.m, but this point would later be disputed in the coronial inquest. That night, all children except for Rama were in bed by 9 p.m, understandably given it was a school night. Rama stayed up with her parents because she was unsettled from the heat. The night temperatures reaching 40 degrees Celsius or 104 degrees Fahrenheit. And as I mentioned before, she was also teething. Hossein watching television while his wife made some food for the following day. According to her parents' later statements to police, Rama fell asleep sometime around 2 a.m. Hossein carried her into the front bedroom and placed her in a double bed that was under a window. Two of Rama's sisters, aged 3 and 4 years old, they were already asleep there, with Rama placed in the middle. Two other sisters also slept in bunk beds in the same room. Due to the humidity of the night, the window, which directly faced towards the street, it was left open with a fly screen wire attached. Now, this wasn't the usual bed Rama slept in, but with her having a temperature due to the teething and generally not feeling well, I guess the thinking was the open window and fresh air, as well as having her siblings close by, would help her sleep. The following morning, November 10th, 2005, Aliyah woke up around 7:30 when some of the other children came in to wake her up. She asked where Rama was, and the other children told her that she was still asleep. That made Aliyah feel uneasy, because it wasn't like the toddler to sleep that late. Add on to that, Rama being unwell with a temperature, I can completely understand Aliyah's mind immediately going to something was seriously wrong. She raced into the bedroom to make sure Rama was okay. And what immediately caught her eye was that the fly screen wire was noticeably torn. It was in that moment Aliyah realised Rama wasn't in the bed. She was nowhere to be seen. The family searched for 30 minutes, They checked under beds, in cupboards, anywhere a small child could hide. But there was no sign of Rama. Hossein then called 000 emergency services to report Rama missing. Hossein reportedly calmly told the dispatcher that they couldn't find his 18-month-old daughter, that the fly screen wire had been removed, and that she was wearing pink pyjamas with puppies on them. When police arrived on the scene, they found the fly screen wire still attached, but there was a U-shaped hole cut. Now, this did contradict what Hossein told the dispatcher in the 000 call. However, I don't give much weight to this because Hossein's English wasn't perfect, and sometimes words can be muddled in translation. Police also found a cable drum located beneath the window. Some early reports said the back door was left unlocked. Now, the testing done with the screen proved it was most definitely cut from the outside. As for the cable drum, Aaliyah originally told police that she didn't know how it got there. She later changed that story and said that she had put it there a few weeks before Rama went missing, and then later changed her story again to say it was just a few days before Rama went missing, that it was placed there after a yard clean-up. Again, similar with the fly screen, there was some time between these different versions, and most, if not all, of Aaliyah's statements and testimony were given through interpreters. So there is increased risk of human error here. But it seemed that police considered these changing stories as Aaliyah attempting to align her story with what her husband was saying in his statements. Rama's parents gave a photo to police to release to the media, as you would expect. And this is the picture you will see if you search for Rama online. It's a picture of a beautiful, happy toddler with big brown eyes. Except that it wasn't a recent photo. This was a photo of Rama at only 10 months of age. And the issue being, as anyone who has been around babies and small children would know, babies and toddlers change rapidly. Especially at the age Rama was in the photo to when she went missing. They are moving more, starting to lose that baby look and turn more into a little person. Rama was not only taller at almost 19 months old, but her hair was also longer. Why didn't the parents give a more recent photo? Was it because they didn't have one? Look, I don't know, but I mean, it's possible. She was the ninth child, and it is a sad reality, but with the first child, you take photos of the smallest thing. But I know with me, third child later, I really don't have all that many photos of my youngest as a baby and toddler. Also, it is 2005. Not everyone had access to a smartphone, something we take as a given today. That you constantly have a phone that doubles as a camera in your hand. But given the Eldinawis didn't have an excess of disposable income, chances are they didn't have a smartphone. They may not have even owned a camera. Although in saying that, given the revolving door of family and friends that visited the family, I find it very hard to believe that no one had taken a photo of Rama in that 8-9 month period. I would be interested in knowing were there photos of the other children in that same time period. Regardless, police helicopters took the skies and officers went door to door in the area. The search extended to a 1.5 kilometre or almost 1 mile radius around the family home. Police divers searched creeks and dams, while a couple of dirty swimming pools and dams and nearby waterways were drained, but no trace of Rama could be found. Strike Force Kilt was formed, a specialised task force responsible for investigating what happened to Rama. Detective Superintendent Michael Willing expressed their ongoing commitment to finding Rama. Quote, "There is someone out there who knows what happened to Rama, and I hope a $250,000 reward will encourage them to provide that detail to police." Unquote.
An exhaustive search even took investigators to Lebanon. But 7 years on, there's still no answers. Rama's ever-growing family need to know the truth. A $250,000 reward now stands. Next week, detectives hand their case over to the coroner. The increased reward is their final-ditch effort to get somebody to come forward with information which they hope will solve the mystery once and for all.
We won't give up until we work out what has happened. So we're hoping that somebody out there has information that could provide us with the answers that the family need.
Strike Force Kilt's first course of business. As we know in most missing children cases, the family is generally looked into first. But there was nothing evident in the early investigation that led police to think they were involved. There were no reports to Department of Community Services. Neighbours and friends of the Eldinawi children appeared well cared for. there were no police reports of domestic disturbances, and the children were routinely taken to see the doctor. Their attendance at school was almost impeccable. Police also looked into the possibility that Rama was taken overseas to Lebanon, either by a childless uncle or because of that family dispute I mentioned earlier. They looked at CCTV footage at Sydney Airport for the days following Rama's disappearance, but there was nothing conclusive that could prove this is what happened. All their inquiries came to nothing. Based on this, the police quickly came to the conclusion that Rama had been abducted. Police looked into known sex offenders in the area, and for years, this was the main focus of the investigation. As many as 60 sex offenders being interviewed, with 20 of these living in the general vicinity of the family home. And what comes to light in the 2012 coronial inquest? The police collected DNA evidence from a suspect, someone who was a suspected sex offender and lived nearby. But nothing was collected from his caravan until 18 months after Rama went missing. This man only living a short distance from the Eldonawis and only had his elderly mother as an alibi for the night Rama went missing. Now, this man has never been named for legal reasons, but he was twice accused of abusing young girls. He was also suspected of trying to lure children into his car at a local primary school. This man was interviewed, and he said on the night in question, he watched some television and then went to sleep. He would also tell police he'd only recently afforded to get electricity to his caravan, and then deposited $63,000 into his bank account the week after Rama disappeared. Now, this obviously caught investigators' attention because he went to being destitute without basic utilities to having a year's income's worth in his bank account in a matter of weeks. In addition to this, investigators discovered he'd been in contact with another alleged pedophile on the morning Rama was last seen. This led police down a path that possibly Rama was sold to a pedophile ring in the area. But the suspect claimed the money was from the sale of 4 motorbikes, and that he had called this associate of his because he owed him money for a truck he had sold him. Ultimately, this line of inquiry was a dead end, and both men were cleared of suspicion. We are just going to take a quick break now for a word from one of our sponsors.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hosts. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethosts.com/terms.
In 2001, the state coroner requested that an inquest be held into Rama's disappearance. When the lead detective, Detective Sedgwick, went back to review all the evidence to write the brief for the coroner, there were reasons why the parents, in particular Rama's father Hossein, needed to be investigated. And this was because, in the initial search of the Eldonawi home, the police found gun parts of a pistol and laptops that appeared to have been stolen. It was also discovered that Hossein had once been a heavy drug user, and this further became of interest to the detective because just weeks after Rama went missing, a source known to police came forward and told them Hossein was a well-known drug dealer in the area. And this source claimed that Rama had swallowed an ecstasy tablet which had caused her death. Now, Hossein was interviewed, and he flat out denied that his daughter had swallowed drugs of any kind, and that he definitely wasn't a drug dealer. However, he did admit that he did previously have a serious drug addiction. He told police in 2001 he spent almost 6 months going to nightclubs in the city almost every night, and taking drugs like cocaine, heroin, and methamphetamines, that he'd asked family members to help him get over his addiction, but they basically turned their back on him. So Hossein took it upon himself to detox. He locked himself in his bedroom for 15 days and refused to leave. And his wife would support this. She confirmed with police she had to change the sheets around him because he wouldn't move, that he didn't even leave the room to use the toilet. But Hossein was adamant that by the time Rama disappeared, he was no longer using drugs. Another theory considered by detectives was that Hossein hurled Rama against the couch in a rage, possibly over her inconsolable crying, and that this incident led to her death. If this occurred, it was speculated that Aaliyah most likely witnessed it. Alternatively, and somewhat along the lines of the ecstasy overdose theory, there is another theory that she was given a medication to stop her from crying, and that she was over-medicated, and it was an accidental overdose. Following either one of these scenarios, or any other accidental death scenario you could think of, relatives were contacted, and Rama's body was removed and possibly buried on one of the farms the family had. In the police brief to the coroner, it stated that they found evidence that Hossein had at least one affair outside his marriage, although it is unclear if this was ongoing or if it ended prior to Rama's disappearance. Adding this to what police already knew about Hossein's life outside his home, kind of this party lifestyle, this was more reason for them to keep digging. In the early hours on the day Rama went missing, several neighbours reported hearing the sounds of male voices arguing from the El Danawi family home. They described the voices as being Arabic. But I'm not sure if this means they were speaking Arabic, or they were speaking with an accent. Not that I think it really matters in this context. And I don't think the arguing itself was all that much of a red flag. Because we do know some of Hossein's family did not approve of how he was living his life, between the drugs and the affair and the welfare payments from the government. That this was a brother or uncle at his house yelling at him about any of that. That doesn't seem outside the realms of reality to me. But this is one of those cases where you can explain away all these individual pieces. But when you take them all together, it does start looking suspicious. So yes, all of these things heighten the suspicions of the investigators. So why wasn't anything done with this information at the time? As I said at the top of the episode, even though there is a lot of parallels between Rama's disappearance and that of Madeleine McCann, there was nowhere near that media pressure nor the police resources that Madeleine's case was given. For the first 6 months of the investigation, there were about 10 detectives working on the case. And that decreased as time went on. The next 6 months, there were only between 4 and 6 detectives working on the case, depending on their workload of other cases. And after that, it was just one singular detective. And that's only when he wasn't working on other cases. He wasn't only dedicated to this one case. A comparison of this for around the same time period was the investigation into the disappearance of Daniel Morecambe. And the disappearance and murder of Daniel is scheduled for later this year. I've had a lot of suggestions for this one, and for good reason. And I have been putting it off. It is an emotionally draining story, but important all the same, so it is coming, but I digress. 13-year-old Daniel Morecambe went missing from the Sunshine Coast of Queensland, Australia in 2003. At the time of Daniel's disappearance and in the years that followed, there were more than 100 investigators on the case. And it is said to be one of the most extensively investigated crimes in Queensland history. 13-year-old Daniel Morecambe was snatched from the side of the road while he was waiting for the bus to buy Christmas presents for his family. And the similarities here is initially police believed that Rama was taken from her bed while she was sleeping next to her sisters. So both stranger abductions. Now these crimes are equally as tragic and horrific. Harming an innocent child is inexcusable and the most disgusting crime a person could do. But the response of these two cases could not be any more different. Daniel was a beautiful Caucasian blue-eyed boy from a middle-class family, and his disappearance and murder received blanket media coverage and all the police resources that could have been offered. And this media coverage also continued on force for many years, until his remains were found and his killer brought to justice. Now, in all fairness, this is mostly due to the incredible strength and persistence of Daniel's parents. They were out there, day after day, fighting for their son. And Daniel did deserve every resource and all the media coverage he received. But then so did Rama. And Rama El Danawi was a gorgeous little brown-eyed Australian girl with curly brown hair. But she was of Lebanese descent, and she did not get the media attention and police resources that Daniel received. It wasn't until, and probably due to, the coroner's inquest in 2012 that a lot of information came out. The deputy coroner concluded in her findings that there was no conclusive evidence to suggest Rama's family were involved in her abduction. However, the coroner did note that there was a number of troubling factors, such as the events of the evening, and there were also telephone conversations mentioned in the inquest. These telephone conversations were allegedly in code, and it is thought that these were codes for drugs. The code seemingly out of place for the conversation, referring to things like gardening and bird watching. The elder Nowy strongly deny this, and there were no drugs or drug paraphernalia found in the home. So there wasn't much evidence to this drug or drug dealing theory, except that Hossein previously had a drug addiction. The coroner could not with any certainty discount Rama's parents as being involved in her disappearance, nor could she definitely say they were not involved. However, she did add there was a number of troubling aspects to their version of events and what she deemed to be puzzling behaviour from what was supposed to be a grieving family. Allegedly, Hossein and Aliyah were heard joking and laughing with other family members about the abduction and about splitting the reward money. And then the night Rama disappeared, Aliyah and Hossein called each other several times on their cell phones. This is despite both stating neither left the home that night. There was a lot of side eye here on True Crime and Unsolved Mysteries forums, because why would they be calling each other if they were in the same house? However, I will play devil's advocate at that, because my daughter and I have a bad habit of doing the same from our bedrooms of an evening. Complete laziness, because neither of us could be bothered walking that very short distance to the other's bedroom. Maybe unlikely, but possibly it's the same situation here. Maybe in an effort to be quiet and not wake the other children. Look, I don't know. Also at the inquest, Rama's sister Mina, who was 3 years old at the time, and one of the sisters Rama shared the bed with that night. Mina recalled seeing a long-haired monster with no hands that night in their bedroom. And an aunt of the elder Nowy's, who lived in the same neighbourhood, she recalled hearing a baby cry out for their mother in the street. The inquest ultimately providing no answers. The coroner concluded that she couldn't say what happened to Rama because the evidence did not point strongly in any one direction. Quote, Rama Elder Nowy simply did not vanish into thin air. Unquote. The coroner stating that she did not accept the family's belief that a complete and total stranger had abducted their daughter, but at the same time considered that possibly someone may have taken her to raise as their own. Based on this, the coroner ruled an open finding and referred the case to the homicide unit to investigate. In the almost 20 years since Rama disappeared, the investigation continued without much progress. In 2008, the elder Nowy's had their 10th child and named her Rama after her missing sister. And sadly, this little girl and Rama's older siblings have lived a lifetime without her and miss her more than ever. Hossein and Aliyah Elder Nowy have always and continue to deny any involvement in their daughter's disappearance. There is currently a $250,000 reward for any information leading to Rama's whereabouts. If you have your own thoughts and theories on the story we discussed today, or any stories we talk about here on Stolen Lives, please search Stolen Lives Podcast on Facebook, like the page so you don't miss an episode, and join the Stolen Lives discussion group to talk about your thoughts and theories. You can also talk to us on Instagram, Stolen Lives Podcast. If you like what you heard today, we would appreciate it if you share this episode on your social media of choice and subscribe and leave a positive review on your podcast app. I also have a Patreon where for as little as $2 a month, not only would you be supporting my podcast, but you will also receive not only this podcast episode early and ad-free, but all of my podcasts, Love to Death, Mysteriously Listed, and Beyond Your Nightmares, as well as one Patreon-exclusive episode a month. If you are interested and able, I will have the link in the show notes. Today's episode was researched and written by me, Ali. Hosting and production was also by me, Ali. Music is by Mayu.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hosts. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethosts.com/terms.